Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Well, as I was saying, there may not be an election in Northern Ireland, but there have been some very important ones around the world. Graham Finlay, Assistant Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, has been giving us his essential guide to some of them over the past few weeks. And today we are going to talk about the US midterm elections. Before we do that, Graham, I want to play you this clip of Donald Trump, because he has dropped again one of his strongest hits. Is there any real doubt that he's actually not going to run? But here you are. This is him speaking at a rally in Sioux City, Iowa, where he pretty much laid his cards on the table.
I ran twice. I won twice and did much better the second time than I did the first, getting millions more votes in 2020 than I got in 2016. And likewise, getting more votes than any sitting president in the history of our country by far. And now, in order to make our country successful and safe and glorious, I will very, very, very probably do it again, okay? Very, very, very probably. Oh, that's nice. Well, get ready. That's all I'm telling you.
Well, there you have it, Graham Finlay. A statement of his position, but also a restatement of the great lie front and centre. This is going to be a really big test of how enduring the political institutions of the United States are and whether they can weather this.
It is. And the big lie, as has been propagated by many, many candidates, including extremist candidates, which the Democrats supported with their dollars and with their votes, even in primaries, to try and put extremist election-denying candidates on the other side of the ticket, thinking it will help them. And those people could get elected. And we're looking at a potential constitutional crisis if you see someone like Carrie Lake, who becomes governor of Arizona, and Mark Finchem, who becomes the Secretary of State. Mark Finchem was at the Capitol, was part of the insurrection. You have Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania, who is not going to probably become governor of Pennsylvania, who was breaching barricades at the Capitol on January 6th. They have said that they will use the power of their office to nullify any result which favors the Democrats.
In a state where I think the margin between Biden and Trump was something like 0.26 of a percent or something like that, wasn't it?
These states are very, very close. And so what you'll then have is a lot of litigation. But you have a Supreme Court majority, which has shown itself to be very deferential to state legislatures, which are very often, in the case of these swing states, controlled by the Republicans through gerrymandering and lots of other methods.
Interestingly, not as acquiescent to Trump's will, the Supreme Court, I mean, as one might have expected in recent judgments, has it been?
This is true. They have, you know, in Trump's personal lawsuits, they've been more reluctant to just sort of run roughshod over or maybe the clear facts of the case. But we do worry that, you know, they, when it comes to electoral politics, they've shown a real tolerance for racial gerrymandering, for all kinds of gerrymandering. And that's going to be a big factor in the upcoming elections.
Okay. We get into the specifics of US midterms in one second, but I'm kind of conscious that we have a little bit of housework to do elsewhere around the world. Brazil, what is the state of play now? Has Lula actually managed to take the reins of power? Well, as Bolsonaro said, yeah, okay, I'm done.
There's a transition process in place. So Bolsonaro finally emerged after 2 days of silence to say, not to concede, not to tell his supporters to stand down, but to sort of acknowledge the results of the election and to indicate to the Supreme Court that he was prepared to start the process of transition. So the process of transition to Lula's presidency has begun. There were
no congratulations, no concession of any kind. You know, just a, yeah, okay, we'll get on with the formalities.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very strange sort of non-speech in some ways. Meanwhile, truckers, who are huge Bolsonaro supporters because he cut the price of diesel, have these massive blockades all over Brazil, which were causing real economic hardship. And the federal police, who were trying to obstruct voting by Lula's supporters during the election, didn't really come to remove them. And the Supreme Court had to sort of threaten the head of the federal police with jail time and fines, daily fines. And even then they were sluggish to respond. Those barricades are largely down, but it's not the smoothest transition process that Brazil has seen.
To Israel now, and another strongman figure, Benjamin Netanyahu, back in office, the only office in Israel that he is legally entitled to hold while under indictment.
Yeah, no, there's a corruption trial going on right now on three charges for Benjamin Netanyahu. And while he's under indictment, and certainly while he's on trial, he can't hold any ministerial office except for prime minister. And he really, really wanted to get back into power, largely to protect himself from being convicted of this and certainly slow the trial down. The trial involves a lot of gifts, cigars and things like that, but, you know, $195,000 worth of gifts, so not a minor amount, and lots of other things, interfering with the press and so forth. But yes, his coalition of Orthodox parties, his own very strong Likud party, and the religious Zionism coalition, of which Itamar Ben-Gvir, we talked about, this extreme politician who has his roots in domestic terrorism, you know, became the third largest party in or coalition in Israel. And so that is quite a dramatic change. The whole Benjamin Netanyahu coalition got 61 seats and so will be able to form a working majority government, but a very bare one.
Okay. Back to the United States now and Tuesday and the midterms. The standard political playbook says that the incumbent is going to get hit and going to get hit even harder at a time of economic crisis. Is there any reason to assume that both the Senate and the House of Representatives won't go from blue to red?
The House, probably not. The House is, you know, it looks really good for the Republicans. As you say, Joe Biden's negative approval, disapproval ratings are extremely high, high 50s, mid 50s in terms of percentage. The economy is worrying a lot of people. You know, the Fed over there is doing what the Bank of England is doing, raising rates quite dramatically, which means less employment. It means, you know, slower growth, possibly a recession. That's getting people's attention. The Republicans have been very successful in motivating people through fear of crime, even though actually crime isn't that significant a factor in most places, and the border. But so the House is probably gone for incumbent, you know, even despite incumbent effects and despite, you know, some things the Democrats might do in particular races. The Senate is absolutely fascinating. If the Democrats hold the seats they have, and that's a big if, and they pick up Pennsylvania in an extremely close Senate election, then they would actually increase their majority. But that would require them to win Georgia, where Raphael Warnock's facing super popular but deeply problematic football star Herschel Walker, which was extremely close the first time. And we might even see, this is my favorite scenario, actually, in Georgian law, if the candidates have to get a 50% majority to actually be elected to the Senate. So, and there's a libertarian candidate in the mix who has on 1.6%. So if neither...
Presumably libertarians end up stealing from Republican voters.
Yeah, right? But if neither Warnock nor Walker get 50%, there's going to be a runoff in a few weeks, which is what we saw the last time. And that's going to be very, very interesting. And that could be for all the marbles, because Catherine Cortez Masto in Nevada is looking really... Masto is looking... shaky against her Republican opponent, who's a real Trumper, Adam Laxalt.
You said something fascinating at the outset there that's worth delving into in a little bit more detail. How do you manage to manipulate voter intention, voter concerns, to make crime a more pressing issue when it is, once again, the economy, stupid?
Yeah, I mean, the economy is complicated. It comes down to people's individual pocketbooks, you know. So there's quite high, not high unemployment. Job growth has slowed down, but it's actually beat expectations. It really comes down to your circumstances, but it's not something which gets the attention of footage of people coming over the border or one really lurid story about violence in a particular place. And I think Americans do feel, partly through political polarization, that America is a violent place. I mean, arguably, it's often been a violent place. In the long run, I mean, America was a more violent place in the 20s and 30s than it has been for decades. And even in the cities, people talk about Democrat-run cities and their crime and violence, you know. Crime in New York City is incredibly low, even compared to rural areas in the South. So, but the perception is being fueled by social media, but also by people who don't maybe follow social media, by Fox News and other right-wing outlets, which have just relentlessly pushed this narrative.
Well, maybe the question that I should be asking or reframing is it, is, how is it that when access to abortion is, depending on the way you ask the question, something that 70 or 80% of the entire US population say that they want, and that you take that right away from them after 40 or 50 years, that that is somehow suppressed on the list of voter concerns and things that they are worried about? Why is that not front and center?
Well, I think that is really fascinating. There are a number of issues for the Democrats, which were working for them. I mean, the generic congressional ballot, you know, how you would vote in your local congressional area, wherever that is, was actually favorable to the Democrats as recently as 4 or 5 weeks ago. 5 or 6, 7 weeks ago, some polls saw the threat to democracy, which the majority of Americans think is real, as one of the number one issues for voters. All of that has slid a lot in terms of it, their salience for the American voter. Similarly, abortion rights was really important during the summer and on into the beginning, but it seems to have weakened. It's particularly interesting to look at the evangelical Latino vote, which, of course, has abortion as a very important issue in terms of restricting access to abortion. And that's a shift which the Republicans are kind of happily surprised to have seen as a shift to them. Anyway, it looks like abortion rights are going to come down to maybe individual races. So there was a very awkward sort of debate between Dr. Mehmet Oz, who's a TV celebrity, and John Fetterman, who's the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. John Fetterman has recently had a stroke. This is the first sort of real public television appearance he's made. And he struggled to talk and struggled to make his points. But Dr. Oz said that he thinks a decision about abortion should be between a woman, her doctor, and local elected representatives. And in a tight race with a lot of suburban female women voters in the suburbs of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, that could be the place where abortion rights actually makes a difference.
That is a fascinating election in Pennsylvania, not least, I think, because Oprah Winfrey has come out in support of Fetterman, even though she created, arguably, Dr. Oz, didn't she?
Yeah, she just came out yesterday, and a lot of people were like, why did you wait so long? I mean, Fetterman was doing extremely well through a very clever social media campaign, which just highlighted the fact that Dr. Oz basically doesn't live in Pennsylvania, doesn't really know much about what's going on in Pennsylvania. He lives in a giant mansion in New Jersey. This, you know, Dr. Oz again was sort of playing on the fear factor surrounding he accused Fetterman of having extremist policies, particularly on crime, because Fetterman's quite a progressive sort of Democrat. And he has been concerned about people who have, you know, served time in prison and how they might be rehabilitated rather than simply excluded completely. So this campaign has been characterized by fear. And a lot of political campaigns are, but a fear of attacks on abortion rights, attacks on healthcare and Social Security on the Democratic side, and fear of crime and immigrants on the other.
Last question. My instinct about this election was that the results aren't as important, frankly, as what happens on the streets after results are called, who heads to the courts after results are called. That's when, if you like, the real test of American democracy begins.
I think you're right. I mean, Americans haven't gotten used to political violence, but they are much more aware of the potential for political violence after January 6th and after the events of the last few years. So we've already seen people with guns monitoring drop boxes because of the sort of attacks on the idea of having mail-in voting, drop box voting. In various states, we have a heavily armed populace and we have a highly polarized country. So we might see actual electoral violence, which the U.S. hasn't seen before. And we might see quite long drawn out recounts, litigation, and again, potential constitutional crises as the previous systems, even if they're operated by Republicans, have been subjected to relentless attacks. And Joe Biden has been talking about this the last few weeks, trying to make this concern for the future of American democracy salient for the American voter. And we're going to see what happens with that in the coming days.
Professor Graham Finley, thank you very much for joining us once again this week.